Welcome to episode 530 of Fly Away. Over the past few years, we've been reminded time and again how much the world relies on travel. From supporting local economies to learning about new cultures, the experience that travel provides helps us to make our world smaller and bring us closer together. Here at Outlander Travel, we've been proud to be a small part of bringing that to you through our weekly podcast. My name is Donna, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Elizabeth, Sandy, Lindsay, Donna, and George. Well, that would be me. So, anyway, Portugal seems to be all the rage these days, with tourism booming, but even more with people moving there for a change of pace, thanks to their flexible visas and tax laws. So Elizabeth, who had never been to the Iberian Peninsula at all in all of her trips to Europe, decided she had to see what the buzz was all about. She's here with us now to share what she has learned. So let's get started. So, Elizabeth, when did you go?
When? I went in early November, which actually is the beginning of rainy season, so not always considered the best time to go. However, it wasn't very rainy. It wasn't too bad. And that happened to be when our wedding anniversary is. We were married 25 years this November. So that is why I plan to go then.
Are you thinking about moving there?
No, but I do know people who have, and it is very trendy to do. So I thought I would show when I wrote the show notes how hip and cool I am. Right?
Nice. All right.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You succeeded. That's good.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's also considered shoulder season is November because it's before the holidays and after the summer rush. So usually rates tend to be a little lower.
And it is the rainy season, so it's after the harvest and all that. So if you go early in November, you're less likely to hit rain. And by the way, I know people who live there now, and they've said that sometimes in November it's perfectly beautiful the whole time. We only had a couple of days of rain, so I feel very lucky on that. And the rest of the time, the weather was beautiful, and it was a little less expensive to go then as well.
So, yes, obviously you haven't been there, so that makes sense about Portugal, but what actually drew you to that destination in the first place?
Yeah, part of it was I hadn't been there. Part of it was my husband hadn't been there. And we needed something for, you know, a special occasion. It's nice to go someplace that neither one of us had been. We also had some friends who had not been. So it just sort of all came together and seemed like a good idea to go. Plus, now I can no longer say that I haven't been to the Iberian Peninsula. So I got to get over that little hump. I still haven't been to Spain, but at least I have set foot on that peninsula of land.
Well, I would highly recommend Spain. I've been in the airport in Lisbon, but not actually been out of the airport.
We're supposed to spend a day in Spain on this trip, but we'll talk more about that later.
Okay. So what you were doing a river cruise down the Douro.
Yes, but we actually, we did it with Avalon, and we did their pre-cruise extension in Lisbon. So it was 3 nights, quote, in Lisbon, although there were a couple of sort of day trips around. It wasn't all just fixed in Lisbon. So first 3 nights, we were right in the heart of Lisbon. Also, obviously, I'd never been there either. So since I was going over there, I didn't want to just go to Porto and back again. You know, I wanted to see at least a little bit more. Obviously, there's a lot more to Portugal to see, but first trip, I feel like I covered it pretty well.
How did you like Lisbon?
I liked it. It's a city. It's very hilly. You know, it actually reminds me a little bit of San Francisco in that regard. I mean, it's hard to walk anywhere without walking uphill.
Yeah. Been there several times, and that was my first impression too, was like, this looks like a much more exotic San Francisco.
Yes, exactly. And it is much older than San Francisco. So I suppose we could say San Francisco looks like it. It also threw me because several years ago, I heard it referred to as the City of Seven Hills, which I always thought of as Rome. And that apparently is a big bone of contention between the two cities. They're both built on seven hills. I don't know how it just happened to be seven hills. But I feel like the hills in Lisbon are a lot more prominent, and maybe that's just my imagination, but I've walked around Rome and Lisbon recently, and it was a lot harder to walk around Lisbon. Some of it, I think, is also made more treacherous by the fact that they really love their tiles and their mosaics, and when it's a little wet outside, that is a little treacherous. So it felt harder to walk because you were just really focused on not falling a lot.
Yeah, Lindsay would know about that.
Oh, God.
Well, and one person in our group did, like, the minute we got off the transfer from the airport, she just went over and needed, she had a pretty bad cut on her eye, and she broke her wrist. Uh-huh. We stabilized it, didn't know that it was broken. The doctor that she saw told her it wasn't, but it turned out it was. So she walked around Portugal for a week and a half with a broken wrist. So yeah, she stepped off the transfer, took maybe two or three steps, and down she went. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what did you see while you were in Lisbon?
That Avalon does their touring is they give you some included excursions and then also some optional. And you can opt to do some of the optionals or none of the optionals. They are additional costs, so that can factor into it as well. So the first night we just went out to dinner on our own. And then the first day was spent in Belém, I believe is how you say it. Which is Portuguese in a way for Bethlehem. There's an important UNESCO site there, a monastery, an old monastery. But also, most importantly, it is the site of the original Pastel de Nata bakery, where the nuns originally passed down the recipe to the bakers there. They've been using the same secret recipe for centuries, literally. And so we, of course, got some pastel de nata. And if you don't know what they are, other than the fact that they are heaven, I mean, I said pastry, so you know it's good, but they are remarkably good. You wouldn't expect them to be so good because they're so simple, but it's a pastry shell, like a tart shell with an egg custard in it. And then they usually sprinkle powdered sugar and or cinnamon on top. And it's best when they're just warm. So when you go get them at this particular place, they are always fresh. They make thousands a day. So so good, so good.
We had those too. We had a tuk-tuk tour, and they took us by and got those. And they sell them in the airport too.
Oh yeah, you would be hard pressed to go anywhere in Portugal and not find them. I mean, they're kind of a national treasure, if you will. So I dare you to go to Portugal and not stumble upon one. You can get away with not eating one, but you would be hard pressed to actually get through an entire visit. Right, exactly. I mean, it's kind of like Whamageddon. It's just how long will you hold out before you see one? And I guarantee you, I mean, we're more than halfway through December and I still haven't heard last Christmas, but I can tell you that, don't you play it.
You want me to sing
either.
It for you? Wait, it has to be the Spotify right now.
But I would not have lasted 2 minutes in Portugal without seeing the pastel de nata. They were on breakfast buffets.
And the quality does vary. And I agree, like, they're better when they're super fresh.
Yes.
But even the ones at the airport are edible. Like, if that's your only way to get one.
Oh, yeah. And they will tell you, anybody, you could stop anybody on the street and they'll tell you, you can ask them, where are the best pastel de nata? And they'll tell you something, and people will all have different opinions about it. So mm-hmm. although this place is considered to be the original, it isn't necessarily considered by all Portuguese to be the best. We thought it was delicious, but we had mm-hmm. several delicious, including the ones that we made ourselves. So we did do an optional cooking class where we got to learn how to make them. And it is not a simple process. She's like, it's so easy. And we're like, yeah, this is not easy.
When will we be creating these?
Yes.
In North Carolina?
I did buy the little pans in the optimistic hope that one day I would make them. But I've been back more than a month now. And so far, I'm not even sure where the pans are. So
don't you just love that? Like, I came home like 10 years ago, all like, I'm going to make.
Mm-hmm.
I did this cooking class and I'm going to make this. Still haven't made.
Yeah. Nope. And it doesn't help. Some of the ingredients are a little bit easier to find in Portugal. And again, they're not hard to find here necessarily, but they're not necessarily on your normal grocery aisle either. So, Well, I don't know. The ones we made were really, really good. So if I could recreate. Oh, you mean the ingredients? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not nearly as good. I know. Well, and actually, one of the people that I know who lives in Portugal is actually a good friend of my sister's. And so I was at her house for Thanksgiving, and he actually came over for Thanksgiving. And I was like, where are the pastel de nata? He was like, oh, I've been here for a week and a half, so I didn't bring any with me. I was like, ah, I was so excited to be able to get them because he brought them last year. But this year he had been in the States for longer. He's like, you wouldn't have wanted to eat them after they've been here for a week and a half. I'm like, yeah, that's probably true. Egg custard, you know, you don't want to do that. So. There was an optional food tour, which I didn't do because I was extraordinarily tired. I was very jet lagged. But Chris and our friend John did it together, and they had a great time. And they also tried a pastel de nata on that tour. So again, no shortage of them. And then that evening, there was an optional fado concert, which is a Portuguese music. We had actually said we were going to go to that, but we decided against it because it turned out to be like a 3-hour thing, and it didn't start till 7:00. And I mean, you guys know me, so
that's getting late night hours.
That's getting real late. I mean, even starting at 7:00 was pushing it. But when you say then 3 hours, I'm like, eh. And listening to fado music, which you've ever heard it, it's beautiful, but it's very relaxing and very. So yeah, I just saw myself face planting into my plate if I'd done that. So, and I was still. Did I mention I was a little jet lagged? So. And then we did a day trip to Sintra and the westernmost point in Europe. So Sintra is not the westernmost point, but it's not far from there. And it was really nice. They arranged for us to be there pretty much right at sunset. So it was really lovely to see the sunset there over the water. And then we stopped in Coimbra on our way to Porto from there. So Coimbra actually is a university town. And it's very interesting because somebody walked by us and they looked like they walked right off the set of Harry Potter. And they explained that that is actually the typical Portuguese university uniform. And although she denies it, the rumor is that that uniform inspired the uniforms and the robes for Harry Potter. J.K. Rowling spent time teaching in Portugal at the university level, but her marriage there was not a happy marriage. If you know anything about her, it was actually an abusive relationship. So she pretty much had disowned everything about Portugal, but there's definitely some spots that are very Harry Potter-esque. And those uniforms are, I mean, they wear these long capes that look like robes. It's definitely, you know, the crest on the, you know, if she didn't borrow from that, it's a very freaky coincidence because it's, very, very close. So, but that was also very interesting, and it's a UNESCO site. It seems like a great deal. Portugal is a UNESCO site. So, very interesting to see. Unfortunately, on the Sintra day, we stopped in a wonderful little wine bar and had a delicious little appetizer and, a bottle of wine. And, we believe that at that point, the tomatoes that my husband ate did not agree with him. And so, hence the stories that are coming about the rest of the trip. So remember, this is our 25th wedding anniversary. Just
very romantic.
So before we even get on the ship, tragedy has struck.
Oh, poor Chris.
Yes.
So that is what we did leading up to in those 3 days. Pretty full 3 days, I would say.
Yeah.
Four. So would you recommend the pre-extension or doing it on your own? How did Avalon actually do?
Well, since I didn't do it on my own, I don't really know. But I will say that it was easy for us to do those day trips out. Very comfortable motor coach, lots of room on it. In fact, there were only 14 people in our particular group. The ship was full, but the way they divided us up, we just had a very small group on our motor coach. So it was lovely. I mean, we each had, you know, two seats. It was very comfortable to get to and from all those places. And we didn't have to worry about traffic or anything like that. So it was easy. I don't know if it would be better to do it on our own, but it certainly was very easy to do it this way.
Very good. Very good. So now that you're on the ship, how is the new, the Avalon boats on the Douro as compared to say some of the other ones on the other lines?
Yeah, well, so far boat, there's just one, the Alegria, and she is brand new. She launched in April. She was christened by her godmother Sherry O'Terry of Saturday Night Live fame. Nice. She was not on board with us, sadly, but it is a beautiful ship and very similar to other Avalon ships. They have the panoramic suites that you get on most of the other Avalon ships, I think all of the Avalon ships now that are in Europe, where the beds face the window and you have the full window opening up. It is a smaller ship, only 98 passengers, I believe. The it's sort of laid out a little bit differently, where like there is the lounge in the back and there's the lounge in the front. So there's the quiet lounge in the back and the lounge in the front, but the dining room is up instead of down, I think, if I remember that correctly, or down. And anyway, it's on a different deck. So I've already sort of forgotten, but it's not all the way in the bottom like it usually is. But really, really pretty ship. The locks are shaped differently on the Douro. So these ships can't go to other rivers and other ships can't come to these rivers. They have to be purpose built for the Douro.
And I also heard that they actually, whereas most of the river cruises on the Rhine and the Danube travel at night, they on the Douro, they actually have to travel during the day.
They have to, because the river is so narrow, and the locks are not open at night. So they really don't have any choice. So basically we would frequently sail during the day and then port somewhere overnight, not even because we needed to see anything near there, just because that was a place that you could put in, and spend the night. I will say that, it's a beautiful river. So sailing during the day was not a hardship. It was really quite nice. The main thing that's weird is many of the places you want to see are not really close to the river. You have to bus out. And so for that reason, it can be a bit tedious. And a lot of times when you leave, the boat will then sail and your bus will drive and meet you at the next place, so that the ship can keep moving on and get closer to the next destination during the day. So if you get off the ship in the morning, there's not really any turning back and coming back to the ship. You kind of have to wait until you're in the next town. It's not hugely problematic, and it's still not, you know, not great distances, not usually, you know, an hour max for the drive time from where you are to where you're going. But it can be maybe an hour out to where you went and then an hour back to the next place that you're going. So logistically, a little bit different than a river cruise where you can just step off the boat and go wander around. If you're going to get off the boat, you probably want to have an excursion planned, because there's really nothing else there. There are a couple of exceptions to that, a couple of little small towns you stop in, but for the most part where you stop, there's nothing there. Just river.
So are they doing like the same kind of like 10 a.m. or noon kind of thing, letting you off to go do your excursion? And then, so you're doing your excursions during the day.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll get off the ship at 8 or 9, depending on what the excursion is. And then a lot of times they'd have you back at the ship for lunch, and then you would go out again if you did an optional excursion or if you were in a different place at 1:30 or 2. So they still manage to get you to and from. It's just you can't get yourself. That's the main difference, is if you're the kind of person who loves river cruising because you like to do your own thing and just wander around the town, then the Douro will present challenges for you, because it's not that sort of a...
Did you, with it set up like this, did you get to experience any scenic sailing during the day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some beautiful stuff. And there's nothing that's like the Rhine Gorge or the Wachau Valley, but it's beautiful. I mean, it's just beautiful all the time. So there aren't huge castles or anything like that, but these wineries just climbing the hill, the steep banks of the river. So yeah, it is truly beautiful for sure.
Was the weather good enough for you to sit like on the top deck and watch things? Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Not every day, not every time of the day, but most days we were able to comfortably sit outside. Yes. Yep. And even open our big panoramic window. So.
Okay.
So the weather was nice enough to do that.
Yeah. The rain we got was actually when we were in Lisbon. So most of the rest of the time we did carry umbrellas, but we ended up not using them. And a lot of times, you know, we would wear layers, but then not really need them. So, and again, since we had the bus almost to ourselves, we were able to, you know, to shed all of our stuff and spread out a little bit. Now, there were days where we were on with more people than that, but in Lisbon, we were always with the same group. So.
Was this a 7-night cruise?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Goes from Porto back to Porto. So you go up to the border with Spain. You can't go any further on the Douro, even though the Douro goes further, because in Spain, they build dams. In Portugal, they have locks, but it's kind of hard to take your ship over a dam. So do not recommend. So you can't sail really past the border.
Were you in a town every day?
At least. Well, yeah. We were stopped at some point every day. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, we weren't always stopped in a town. Sometimes we were just stopped somewhere that had a little place where we could get off the ship and get onto buses. So, and since we're talking about Spain, this seems a good opportunity to sort of cover this. So basically, by the time we boarded the ship on Wednesday, Chris was pretty ill with whatever he had eaten. And we're not positive it's the tomatoes. The little wine bar was totally charming, so it may not have been, but it was one thing that he ate that I didn't. So logic. But by Wednesday, he was pretty sick, and it just didn't go away. He would get a little bit better, and then he would get worse. He would try to eat something, and then that would not go well. And so, we kept talking about getting a doctor, and then he would feel better. And so basically what it came down to was, if you want to do the excursion to Salamanca, you do that on the day that you're docked as close to the Spanish border as you get. But it's an all-day excursion, couple hours out on the bus, all day in Salamanca, couple hours back. And if you've ever had food poisoning, and probably even if you haven't ever had food poisoning, you know that that is not going to be a fun day if you do that. Mm-hmm. So basically, he decided he wasn't going to go. And with that, I just decided I wasn't going to go. I was getting worried about him. It was more than halfway through our trip by then. He was still sick. And so I was like, you know what? I just want to stay close to him. So, and the ship does sail around. So, you know, it's kind of nice to be on the ship. You know, it was very relaxing. I worked a lot that day. So, all was not lost, but he ended up spending a great deal of time in the bed in our stateroom, yeah. Which I have been sick on a
river. I know, I'm like, before. This sounds familiar.
I can assure you that, and when I got sick, it was COVID. So none of this is ever the River Cruise's fault. But if you ever want to spend 3 days in bed, Avalon is a great line to do it on because they have the best beds in the business. Oh,
that I agree. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and they'll bring you room service and stuff. I mean,
yeah. Well, and actually the staff was so kind to him, and they, you know, he would come down and maybe have soup or whatever, but they did whatever he needed them to do for him. So, you know, if he needed bread or whatever, and one of our servers joked about how he was going to come up there with the dancer, the Spanish dancers that, or the Portuguese dancers that they had coming in. So yeah, it was good laughs all around.
That sucks, though. I hate that he was sick the whole time. God, that really stinks.
But I will say, and we still have a little bit more of the trip to talk about, but I will say that he loved Portugal. Like, he definitely saw the beauty in it and would go back 100%. He might not eat the tomatoes next time.
I mean, he needs to go back. Yeah. You need to take two on that. Yeah.
And the excursions that they offer were fantastic. I mean, we did one that was included that was to a winery, and it's owned by a countess. She's actually got the official title of countess back from the old days. And her name is Maria, and she was a hoot. I mean, I just can't even put into words this lady's personality. It was amazing. And she had a Rhodesian Ridgeback. I don't know if you've ever seen these dogs, but they are gorgeous. They're huge and they're so pretty and so well-mannered. So I spent a great deal of time talking to the dog on that. But we walked around her farm, her vineyard, and it is also a hotel, and it was lovely. And I think she served us like 4 glasses of wine. So, you know, it was 11 o'clock in the morning and we're all rolling out of there, thankful that we had a bus and didn't have to drive ourselves. There was an optional olive oil tasting one day, which was extraordinary. I don't know if you know this, but a lot of the world's olive oil actually comes from Portugal. They are the largest producer. So even sometimes when you buy Italian olive oil, it may have actually originated, in either Portugal or Spain. So we were able to buy a little bit of, small press olive oil. And we did a tasting where we got to sort of talk about the differences between cold pressed and virgin and all of that stuff. So really interesting. And I've done things like that before, but I felt like this one was just extraordinarily good. We also did an optional corks and barrels tour, which was fantastic. You know, Portugal is number one in producing cork. And so we got to see how they actually get it off the trees, how that whole process works. And then they took us to a cooperage, and coopering is something that's an art and a science.
Very much so. Yes.
A lot of work. And so to see these guys like handcrafting these barrels, and they make all sizes from itty bitty ones all the way up to really big ones. Sadly, there was no shopping there because they make them to order. So I was like, I could have walked out with one of those itty bitty barrels, but they was fascinating. And they talked about how they've been through difficult times with different rules about how alcohol is treated, whether you can use wood or not in order to age it. And you know, obviously we know that wood is the best way to age it, but there have been times where health departments and such didn't feel like that was true. And so it's just fascinating history, really, really interesting, and definitely a unique kind of, usually you're taken to places that are really more stores than working shops, but they took us to places that were working shops. Like we could see them boiling the cork down and making these barrels. And, you know, it was fascinating.
That's cool. Did you have any port while you were there?
I did. And, you know, yeah. I don't love port. I didn't love port before I got there. I like it a little bit now, I think. And I figured if I'm ever going to like it anywhere, I would like it in Portugal. But yep. It's too sweet for me in general. So some of it was way too sweet. Some of it was just mildly sweet. And I was like, I can drink this. I can do this. But
yes. Did you try the white port?
No.
Okay. I think that might be the exception. For a lot of people, it was for me because I didn't like port, but I love that it was the oldest family-owned farm that had produced port, and they produced white port, and it was so freaking good. I sent a whole case home.
I would absolutely try it again, and I will tell you that when we go back, we will go to Porto and spend more time there. We had one night at the end of our cruise. So the cruise disembarked on the 13th of November, which is actually our wedding anniversary. I'm giving out all my personal information. It was, you know, my birthday.
My social security number. Are these your passwords?
So we didn't want to fly back home on our anniversary. So I said, Chris suggested, let's stay one more night. Now, we've been planning this trip for 2 years. So I decided that I was going to treat myself and Chris, and we were going to stay at a 5-star hotel for the one night, the Yeatman, which is a very well-known hotel there. It's right near the World of Wine. It's got the best view in the city. I've always wanted to stay there. I've put clients there and they come back raving about it. It's like, let's do this. Well, you know, it'd be a nice cushy landing after our, you know, not that we were not spoiled on Avalon. We absolutely were, but why not be spoiled a little bit more? And they have a wonderful restaurant there that has 2 Michelin stars. Now, I have had 1 Michelin star dinners, but I have never gone above that. So I said, let's do this. So for 2 years, we've been planning this trip. I made reservations early this year and they were very kind. And I told them it was our 25th wedding anniversary and that it's a very special occasion for us. And they're like, oh, madam, we're so excited to have you here, blah, blah, blah. So that day we get off the ship. I was like, Chris, you think you can eat a Michelin star meal? He's like, I don't think I can eat anything. Like, are you sure? He's like, I have never been more sure of anything in my life. So he sent me down to the spa. That was his anniversary gift to me. And I had a wonderful spa treatment. Came back up. I got changed. He still wasn't feeling well. I was like, do you want me to see if they can get a doctor? And he said, no, I'll be fine. I'm taking medicine. And I'm like, we have a really long day tomorrow flying. Are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure. So I went down to the bar about 30 minutes before my dinner was supposed to start. Our dinner, excuse me. And she welcomed me. Hello, Mrs. Karen. Can I get you a cocktail? And where is your husband? Which I'm sure is one of those things that's a little awkward to ask when you know that it's a 25th wedding anniversary and a woman shows up.
You don't know
her man. Yeah, you got to be diplomatic with that. But they were very kind. I said, he is not feeling well. And I told her the whole story. And she's like, oh, can we send him a doctor? I was like, I would love for you to send him a doctor. I don't know if he will agree to it. She said, do you want to call him? And so I tried and he didn't pick up the phone. So he said, may we call his room and try and, you know, and can we send up some chicken soup? I was like, right now he doesn't feel like eating anything, but by all means call him because he might listen to you instead of me. So I enjoyed my beautiful cocktail. George is nodding his head. He's like, yep. So I'm enjoying my cocktail and she keeps checking with me. She says, we got in touch with your husband. He's agreed to see the doctor. We're bringing a doctor over. So Chris had to run down to an ATM to get cash because this cash only for this doctor. I know, which and it was a female doctor. I'm like, but anyway,
wow.
It was 100 euro. They came. She came to the room. She prescribed, I think, 5 meds for him. I won't go through all the details of what they are because it's a little too personal for Chris's sake. But one was electrolytes, so not even a drug. The hotel sent a taxi out to the pharmacy to get his drugs, bring them back. The total cost for that was 55 euro.
Wow.
What a country, right?
Oh, my God.
Right?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
No wonder people are moving to Portugal.
Holy.
So anyway, he starts taking meds and he starts feeling better. I, in the meantime, enjoy my dinner. And I won't bore you with all the details, partially because there was a lot of wine, so I don't remember them all. But I get to the first area to check in, and they sit me down looking out over the city, bring me a glass of champagne and 2 little hors d'oeuvres. Once I'd enjoyed that, ma'am, are you ready? They take me back. I'm sitting by myself. They still put me at a seat by the window that obviously they had picked out for us for our anniversary. It was beautiful, looking out over the city. And then they say, we have a surprise for you. It turns out everybody had this surprise, but we go into the kitchen and there's a table set up, and the chef comes over and talks to me, and you know, like, and they bring me a little amuse-bouche kind of thing. And I'm watching them work and I'm just fascinated. And they're eventually like, ma'am, you have to leave. Go sit here.
Let's go back to your table now.
I was going to eat in here the whole time. So I went out and just course after course of just this amazing food, like just really outstanding. And the port I had that night was really very good. So my server comes over. He says, so I heard that your husband might want some chicken soup. I was like, he loves chicken soup. If he is feeling better, I'm sure he would love some chicken soup. So he said, I've got it taken care of. He said, I don't think we have chicken soup, but we'll whip something up.
Oh my God.
So I get back from my wonderful anniversary dinner that I spent by myself, like so many other trips that I take by myself. It was a little depressing. And I get upstairs and the first thing Chris says to me is like, you have got to try that chicken soup. I'm like, I just had like 18 courses. I don't know how I would. He said, just go smell it. He will tell you to this day is the best chicken soup he's ever had in his life. Aww. So happy ending. And he was perfectly fine for the flight back. He was feeling much better. The meds kicked in and he was doing great.
That makes me wonder why you didn't go to a doctor earlier. I mean,
oh yeah. I mean, you didn't like, even have, I told you so for dessert. Cause you're a good.
Yeah. Mom. Just George, tell Sandy why we didn't see a doctor before then.
It's not that he didn't know that he needed to see one. It was just where the recommendation came from.
Uh-huh.
Yes, this podcast has rapidly turned into what 25.
I can't say that I might have done that before too.
Well, you've been married a long time too, George. Yeah. So
37.
Yeah. I think that honestly, part of it wasn't so much that he doesn't respect my opinion, but he wanted to tough it out. Like he thought it was getting better. Finally, after a week, he's like, you know what? This is not getting better. And that plane is going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have to go, that was the other thing is he didn't want to go anywhere. And so when they said, well, we could bring the doctor to you, he's like, well, yeah, sign me up. You know, I can run down to the ATM.
It's not a huge emergency room bill.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think that also helped was he was like, well, if you can send somebody here and they can provide drugs that will make me feel better, then 100%.
I mean, 155 euro for all of that is
crazy.
For a concierge doctor. Yeah, that's awesome.
The plane ticket and the 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
Still cheaper.
I just wanted to go into a doctor's office where they don't ask what's your insurance and they ask like, how can we help you? What's wrong?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I will say, just a little plug for 5-star hotels. People are like, well, why do I need a 5-star hotel? I'm like, well, you don't need one, but I'll tell you what, when they know your name when you check in and they know you when you come down to the bar and order your drink and they know that you're there for your 25th wedding anniversary, there's no checking the books or anything. They know what is happening that night and they know who you are and why you're there. There is nothing better than that. They genuinely wanted him to feel better and have an amazing experience.
Well, and I'm sure that made the flight home infinitely better. I mean,
I can't imagine.
Yeah,
nobody.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add, Elizabeth?
No, I think I've given you enough of my personal life and my husband's for that matter. to fill an episode.
Well, that's our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because we'd love to hear from you. So, on behalf of Elizabeth, Sandy, George, Lindsay, and myself, Donna, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.